This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is the Daily Digest on the Bigger Picture with me, T. Shao Ik, Lim Soo Ann, and Julia Jacobs. As always, we have two stories for you this hour.
So for our first story, a location change was announced last week for the annual UN Conference on Climate Change. And this was changed from Santiago, Chile, all the way to Madrid, Spain. So how will this impact the arrival and presence of delegates and especially NGOs? Right, so for many people, plans had been made months in advance in anticipation of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change's Conference of Parties, or more commonly referred to as COP. Mm-hmm. But these same plans were put in jeopardy last Wednesday after Chile abandoned plans to host not only the 25th COP, but also the APEC summit due to deadly anti-government protests in its capital, Santiago. So with that announcement, the fate of COP25 hung in the balance, with concerns that the annual talks might actually have to be scaled down, postponed, or even abandoned.
Right.
But 2 days later, luckily, the UN's top official on climate change, Patricia Espinosa, she issued a terse statement that COP25 would still happen on the same dates of 2nd to 13th December, but all the way in Madrid, Spain.
Yeah, and this is actually the second time that the UN authorities have had to scramble to find a new meeting place for COP25 because Brazil was originally welcomed for the gathering but backed out after right-wing President Jair Bolsonaro took office in January.
So the COP is a supreme decision-making body of the UNFCCC, and while all state parties to the convention are represented at the talks, it is also often attended by other organizations and agencies, and a key task of the COP is to review the national communications and inventories submitted by parties. And based on that information, they assess the effects of the measures taken by each state party and the progress made in achieving the ultimate objective of the convention.
Yeah, considering many of the world's national commitments to cut greenhouse gases are pegged to a 2020 deadline, this year's talks are essential to putting the 2015 Paris Agreement into practice.
Yeah.
So just a brief refresher, the goal is to keep global temperature rise to below 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels and to pursue efforts to limit the temperature increase even further to 1.5 degrees Celsius. It's also hoped that COP25 would pave the way for a crunch conference in the UK next year at which long-term response to the climate emergency will be decided. But the problem now is that with this rather last-minute change in locations, we're not quite sure how many delegates and organisations would actually be able to make it to Madrid.
So since the news of the location change emerged, the spotlight has been shining again on Greta Thunberg, of course, as you know, one of the most vocal activists for climate change. And as we've discussed several times on the show as well, Greta began her journey in mid-August when she set sail from Plymouth, UK for New York on a two-week crossing of the Atlantic. And she's sort of like trying not to fly because to reduce her carbon footprint. Unfortunately, now she's on the wrong side of the Atlantic with the venue change. So she recently tweeted that, you know, she's looking for anyone to help her find transport to get her back across the Atlantic to Europe. And another group of 36 young European campaigners who, like Greta, had sailed from Amsterdam towards Santiago now also find themselves going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, and I saw quite a few news articles on these two groups, on Greta and this group particularly. But, you know, I noticed that most of these delegates getting attention are generally from the more industrialized global north. So these were all European campaigners. So I got in touch with Alizan Mahadi earlier this morning, who's a senior fellow with the Technology, Innovation, Environment and Sustainability Division with the Institute of Strategic and International Studies in Malaysia.
That's a long one.
Yes. So I wanted to speak to him about this whole change in venue, right? Because there is the change in location. A lot of people are affected by it, but why are only certain groups of people getting more attention on them? So I asked him who are the delegates or organizations that would perhaps be most affected by this change in venue?
Yeah, firstly, for Greta, I think the problem for her is not so much of an issue of finances, but more the logistics, because she's taken to the principle of ensuring that she's only doing carbon-free trips. And in that sense, I would say the biggest concern is not for how Greta to get there, because even Spain's ecological transition minister said that she will support Greta to ensure that she will attend the summit. So I think there'll be many other groups that will be affected by this change. Before I get to that, first of all, we have to understand that the UNFCCC is an international environmental treaty which has party members and observers. The party members are UN member states, meaning countries and governments, and while the non-party members are observers, usually NGOs. I think the biggest impact will be towards NGOs, mm-hmm. Especially from the south, from the developing countries, because they will lack the financial resources to especially, you know, for such a last-minute change in terms of logistics, flights, hotels, etc. In terms of formally, the party members, from my understanding, at least two delegates are funded for each country, so that should not hamper too much the ability of member states to attend. However, we might expect smaller delegations, especially from developing countries.
Mm-hmm. And I think you mentioned a bit of the challenges, but what are the main issues or problems that attendees would have in getting themselves from wherever they are or from changing their plans from getting to Chile to now getting to Spain?
So two parts of it. And the most important part is the formal negotiation process, which is undertaken by the party member states.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for that, as I mentioned briefly earlier, we may expect smaller delegations from developing countries because of the increasing cost for traveling. And here, when you have smaller delegations, in these large meetings, there are often many parallel meetings that occur at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So you need quite a large delegation to ensure that your inputs will be recorded into all the processes that occur at the same time. So here, the challenge would be there might be an advantage from industrialized countries who have bigger delegations to have more influence in the outcome of the meeting. So that's the formal part. But I think the biggest impact will be to the NGOs, essentially,
mm-hmm.
the non-party observers. Here, the NGOs are not funded. They are self-funded, and they do a lot of advocacy work during the summit. So it will be a huge challenge for them to switch from Chile to Madrid. The media as well will be impacted. From the last Conference of Parties, COPs, there's a huge, significant number of media actors, I think more than 1,000. So the challenge there perhaps is more in terms of the advocacy, both at the conference as well as the media reporting of the conference might be affected by this change.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned those parallel talks that happen alongside the COP, right? But what is the importance of these more informal meetings?
Yes, during the COP events, there is also what's called side events usually. And the side events, some would say, are even more important than the formal negotiation process. I'm not sure that is true.
Mm-hmm.
But the side events are quite important in setting the agenda of the meeting itself. So mm-hmm. the meetings will have, of course, pre-prepared texts that will be negotiated. But the side event will raise many of the new issues that perhaps will be important for the next COP. And here, many of these side events are hosted or in partnership, at least with NGOs. And I think there will be an impact on the ability of or the quality of the side events for this year's COP.
All right. And what about the main event then for the COP itself? Why is it important that there is a fair and inclusive access of all delegates and participants to these talks?
First of all, we have to understand the importance of the COP itself. And the COP set the global agenda, rules and procedures for climate action across the world. And here, historically, the challenge has always been within the negotiation process that there's been a divide between the global north and the global south.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for this is an issue of who is responsible for emissions. Global north, meaning the industrialized countries, have had huge amount of historical emissions, they call it,
mm-hmm.
from the past. They have emitted quite a lot of carbon emissions. And while industrialized countries are currently emitting a lot of emissions and a growing amount of emissions. So the negotiations have always been a clear divide between the industrialized countries and the developing countries, and hence the division is always the industrialized countries and the group of 77 plus China, which is the developing countries. So the summit is very important in terms of setting the agenda for climate action across the world. And we need voices from all parts of the society for this. And especially there needs to be a stronger voice from the global south. And with changes like these, it could act as a barrier for participation from the developing countries, both in terms of the formal negotiation process, but perhaps more in terms of the participation of NGOs. Now, at all these United Nations summits, meetings, usually there is already an imbalance in NGOs in terms of participation from industrialized countries and developing countries. NGOs are usually represented by developed countries, industrialized countries.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, here there might be less of advocacy and voices heard from NGOs from the south.
And with less than a month to go, really, before COP25 begins, do you think that there is space for the organizers to do something to get people, especially from NGOs, to get them to Madrid?
Well, it's very difficult, I think, because of the timing, but also because of the need, as you mentioned in your previous question, of inclusivity. Now, who do you bring? You know, it's such a wide spectrum of actors that you have to consider. So I think it's very difficult. Just to give you an example there, at the side of the COP25, there is usually a youth conference as well on climate change. And some of the youth, especially from the south, are upset that the Spanish minister said that she will support Greta to attend the conference. But how about others? You see, so I think it's very difficult in this last minute to bring a huge amount of people. It's very difficult to select and identify who to bring, you know, who is important and who is deemed not so important. However, perhaps one thing that can be done is there has been an increased idea of virtual participation.
Mm-hmm.
Not the same, but I think there has to be a push from the organizers to perhaps improve and enhance the importance of the virtual participation for this year's summit. The facility is already there, but I'm not sure myself how effective it is, but I think there should be more concentration on ensuring virtual participation.
So that was Alizan Mahadi, Senior Fellow with the Institute of Strategic and International Studies, Malaysia. And what he said about the balance, the shift in balance, was also echoed by others as well. So Harjit Singh from environmental group Action Aid International said that it would be hard to find accommodation and flights, especially at affordable rates in this time period.
Yeah.
And that visas would be another challenging issue because it'll be difficult to obtain at short notice as well.
That's right.
And then all these changes are then, and I quote him here, likely to shift the balance of power towards the wealthier countries of the global north.
And the impact of this will be felt the most by organizations who are more restricted in terms of funding, obviously. So Nico Oliveira, the Latin American team leader of 350.org, said that they had actually planned to bring indigenous representatives and partners to the summit. But with this change of location, the cost of airfares and accommodation could easily double and eat up to 10 to 15% of their budget for the event. And so just to quote Oliveria, she said, "What may not mean anything to the large corporations of the fossil fuel industry, to us as non-profit civil society organizations, and even more to the indigenous organizations, can often represent our survival as active agents of change."
Yeah, and while many are actually grateful that Spain has stepped in to offer to host, preparing for the event with just 4 weeks, you know, will be such a huge task. Even the German government, which hosts the UN climate headquarters in Bonn and is the default fallback for climate talks, said that for them, this would not have been logistically possible in such a short time.
Yeah. And it is really a short time with only less than about a month to go.
Yeah,
many delegates are very concerned about whether they can even get that visa for Europe to get there. And so news sources have quoted a Spanish foreign ministry spokesperson to say that there is a coordination meeting happening in the ministry next week to establish a process for the visa application. So hopefully in this period of time, the Spanish government will be able to sort out the logistics for the delegates, and especially NGOs or less financially able delegates to to get them to Madrid, or at least provide them with an alternative so that they can get their voices and messages heard at the summit.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's because, you know, these things are planned way in advance. You know, mm-hmm. the dates for these things are set every year. So especially the less wealthy NGOs and the indigenous communities, because they're trying to make their voices heard, as if not necessarily at the negotiations itself, at the fringe events, mm-hmm. you know, to be yeah. heard, to get that media attention. So this kind of last minute change, while understandable, is just going to throw those plans into a, you know, just into a tailspin. Like, it's not gonna help in any way. And so, and like you said, like, the richer the fossil fuel yeah, industry fellows right. are all gonna be able to get there with no issues whatsoever. It's gonna be quite tricky, I think.
So this will be quite the COP to watch, I think. Yeah. And especially as you said, Suen, with the targets of 2020.
Yeah.
That's the decade milestone that everyone is looking at, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you have any thing you'd like to share about this issue, you can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also call us 0377-33-2900. From climate change, we'll be talking about floods in Malaysia next up in our second story. But going on your note of hope, Suen, we leave you first with Ain't No Mountain High Enough by Marvin Gaye, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.